which they rightly should be. And I think this is the more people learn about this, the more people are going to get upset. And this is what we need to do. We just need to raise a lot of ruckus about this. And we're not going to shut up until it's fixed. And that's what I keep telling the legislators. This is an issue like civil rights, like women's rights. This is not something that if you fail to get legislation passed one year, you just maybe give up on it and feel, well, you know, you're never going to get. This is such a basic issue of democracy that people will never give up, and they will just keep fighting and fighting and fighting. So I think it's just a matter of time before we win on this, and hopefully it's sooner rather than later.
That's it for Sprouts this week. A look at irregularities in the 2004 U.S. election. Our national coordinator was Ursula Rudenberg. Thanks to the Pacifica Foundation for distribution. This program was produced by Dory Smith of WHUS at the University of Connecticut. I'm John Schwenk. For more information on Sprouts, visit sproutsradio.org.
And coming up next on Freak Radio, it's Bathurst Spears Broadsides, December 30th, 2004 show with special guest star Pat Ring. Stay with us. And that was Morgan Firestar from an old collection of hers, No Strings Attached. No Strings Attached, and the name of the song was Children in a Cage. Morgan was a anti-psychiatric activist who was concerned about the rights of psychiatric victims, and she committed suicide in 1996 here in Santa Cruz, right in the middle of a 8.5-month-long protest in front of City Hall, designed to alert the city and pressure the Santa Cruz City Council into altering, abolishing, or supplanting the Santa Cruz City's sleeping ban, or of the a part of the larger camping ordinance, which may seem a little arcane to people. Why not fight for housing? Why not fight for health care? Why not fight for, you know, decent wages? You're fighting for the right to camp outside. What kind of idiocy is this? Well, the answer is you start with the most elemental idiocies and you work up to the other ones. And in the studio with me, I have to kind of review this whole situation. A man who was repeatedly arrested at that time in 1996 for standing up for the right of people to not even camp, but sleep, for God's sake, which is still illegal under Santa Cruz City Municipal Code 6.36010A. I'd like to introduce, for those of you old-timers, it's going to be a familiar journey back in town. For those of you who haven't weren't around 1996, you might not remember this man, but I do. And I'll introduce you to him now. His name is Pat Ring. I call him Pepper Tongue Pat. Hi, Pat. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing okay. I'm back.
Belly up to that microphone.
Back in a big way.
All right.
And
freezing, I noticed, with all the rain, soaking in the studio.
Probably hear my teeth chattering.
Wow, I'm going to have to get you some Kleenex pretty soon, or else maybe some pneumonia treatment. But you, I mean, you're trying to really emulate the homeless out there by seeing how it feels once more to be out there in the rain. Right?
Yeah, but I can go home and take off these clothes and get warm and change clothes and sleep warm and comfy all night, and they can't. And that's one of our inalienable rights that we should have worldwide, but especially here in the United States, is certain the right to sleep.
And that was what one of the things that initially drew you to our bizarre and eccentric band of we weren't even doing a sleep out like we used to do actually some years before. Sleeping out would mean actually sleeping at night at City Hall illegally. In fact, the man who ran the sleep out, Dan Hopkins, along with Sean Alimi, they were actually trying to kind of stay awake and trying to be legal throughout the night. Is that my memory correct on that?
Yeah, and they did for the most part, and but we were ticketed and arrested for such ridiculous things as covering up with a blanket at night.
And, that was Sergeant Clark, as I remember.
Oh, my good buddy, Sergeant Clark.
Who's now Lieutenant Clark, by the way.
Uh-oh.
He's gone up in the Santa Cruz police hierarchy. I've said this over the years. You remember his famous response in those days. He came and took blankets. This is around the time when Celia Scott and Catherine Byers were on the Santa Cruz City Council, and they were kind of supposedly investigating a place for homeless people to sleep or camp. They spent 6 months from 1995 in, God knows, October through 96 in March looking for a place to camp at the same time as Kennedy and Rotkin were closing down the open-air shelter. And Dan Hopkins, who began this protest, accused those two politicians, one of whom is now mayor again, Mike Rodkin, of killing homeless people through the action of closing down Coral Street. Was Dan Hopkins making an extreme statement, Pat?
Not at all. Mike Rodkin is one of the big scumbags of the world. That's going to be edited out, right?
Of course, we don't want to call our mayor a scumbag. What do you mean by scumbag? This man is on the board of directors of the ACLU. He has been 5 times elected, at least, to Santa Cruz City Council. How can you call him a scumbag?
Well, he's a feminist socialist.
Well, are you saying that feminist socialist?
No, but he's neither of those.
So you say he's a hypocrite?
The most hypocritical person I've met in my entire life.
So you actually have spoken with Mike Rodkin?
I've had words with Mike many times.
Now, let's get rather than simply batting about attacks on poor defenseless Mayor Mike Rodkin, who, by the way, we talked to him on the last show. We called him up at home because he gives out his home phone number, and we didn't. And I also played your poignant message to Mike, not to him, to tell him at home on the phone. I didn't think that I really wanted to do that. I'm not having your courage, and you're not called Pepper Tongue Pat Ring by me for nothing. What was your message again to Mike Rodkin?
Hey, Mike, fuck you.
So you're kind of, you know, I mean, that's a strong message, I must say.
Well, he deserves it.
Now, you said this before, and it had some consequences, did it not?
When I came to Santa Cruz, I thought, of all the places in the entire world, Santa Cruz is known for its free speech and sort of left-wing politics. And I thought, hey, if you can't do it here, you can't do it anywhere. And Mayor Rotkin repeatedly had me arrested for such things as protest signs.
Protest signs.
Protest
signs. Describe
that
for me. What was that about?
We had a sign. We had several signs at this vigil.
In front of the city hall, right?
Saying different things, and he had me arrested for him.
As I remember,
numerous times.
As a matter of fact, I mean, my memory of these goes in and out. One time I remember, I think there was a large sign in front of city hall that sort of denounced Mayor Rotkin for hypocrisy and talked about civil disobedience.
It quoted Thoreau.
And which you've been reading recently, I noticed.
Yeah.
Do you remember what the quote was from Thoreau? Or what
yeah, it's our civic duty to violate unjust laws.
And so Rotkin, perhaps misunderstanding the sign, violated the Constitution by removing the sign because he felt that somehow the right to embarrass his mayorship with such a sign in front of City Hall was unjust in some way, perhaps.
There was another incident where a man came up and was actually verbally attacking a woman who was laying on the ground at the vigil, calling her a scumbag. And I came to her defense. And the mayor had me arrested for defending this woman's right to live.
And you came to his defense because in the course of that discussion you were outspokenly critical of that man, told him to fuck off and such. Or what exactly did Rotkin have you arrested for? What was the charge?
Actually, I told Rotkin to fuck off. I didn't tell the man to fuck off.
So Rotkin came out and tried to defend the man who was criticizing the woman whom you were trying to defend.
Yes.
And must have been quite a scene. Was I there? I don't think I was, but I remember.
I don't think there wasn't really too many people there at the time, and I was shortly led away. So
taken into custody for what was the charge?
Disturbing the peace or some crap like that.
Did you in fact tell Mike to fuck off again?
I probably did. Yeah, that's usually all I ever have to say to him.
So
that's all he deserves.
Now, some of the signs that were up around City Hall, I remember they went to court to make sure that the signs were no more than 14 inches in obtruding from the light pole, and they had these kind of classical light poles at City Hall. You remember that?
Yeah, they said that wasn't exactly a light pole. It has a light on it and it has a pole.
But
it seemed to be
really
a light pole.
It's not a light pole.
But their definition of light pole was something. I don't know what their definition of light
pole
was.
Definition.
But that didn't seem to be a light pole.
So it was therefore illegal to post signs on that pole?
Well, and they actually took a tape measure and measured our signs.
Well, they wanted to be, you know, accurate and legal.
And,
as Mike Rotkin said, the reason we have such important rules against sleep in Santa Cruz is not because we are unique, as we are, in cities in banning the actual act of sleeping between 11 and 8:30, but because we don't do it like Carmel does just by sending the police in to bust heads. Instead, we send them in with a rule book, a law book, and a measuring tape. In this case, a stopwatch for sleeping.
Yeah, well, they managed to clean me off the street for a while.
Well,
I think I was in jail for a week that time.
So you went to jail for a week for essentially taking ownership of these signs that were posted on. Did they say "fuck you, Rotkin" or
no,
other mean things?
I don't remember what they said really, but
something about the First Amendment and the sleeping ban, as I remember. Yeah,
there was no hate speech. There was no foul language. They were pretty literate signs.
But I remember at that time, Councilmember Kennedy helped to tear down the signs as he walked by.
And I.
I did witness that.
I remarked to him that, Scott, you're a civil libertarian, you're an upholder of free speech, and he said, arrest this man.
Well, there you are. What could be plainer? And then, I mean, this is a, I, You know, for many people, this is ancient history. What are we talking about 1996 for? I mean, what, this is 2004, 8 years later.
If nothing's changed.
Indeed. The same law. Well, there are some, being very, very accurate, if you want to be, you know, very particular about it. The sleeping ban law has been modified so that it is no longer a misdemeanor to sleep twice if you sleep twice or if you cover up with a blanket twice, that's no longer a misdemeanor. It's simply a repeated infraction. If you camp twice, it is still a misdemeanor. And you had to have to camp twice within 48 hours before. Now you have to camp twice within 24 hours.
What does that mean? What does camp mean?
Camp means, actually, I'm glad you asked me that. I will whip out my pocket edition of the sleeping and camping ordinances, which I carry with me at all times, lest I be caught unawares in a rainstorm. Actually, I don't have to do any camping. Why don't you put on that sweater? It might make you a little warmer. I don't have anybody dropping dead in the studio here. The camping ordinance reads 6.36010, no person shall camp anywhere in the city of Santa Cruz, whether on public or private property, except as here and after expressly permitted. To camp means to do any of the following. A, this is the sleeping ban, sleeping between 11 and 8:30 a.m. To sleep at any time between the hours of 11 p.m. and 8:30 a.m. in any of the following places. 1, outdoors, with or without bedding, tent, hammock, or other similar protection or equipment. 2, in, on, or under any structure not intended for human occupancy, whether with or without bedding, tent, hammock, or other similar protection or equipment. And 3, in, on, or under any parked vehicle, including an automobile, bus, truck, trailer, camper or recreational vehicle. That's one definition of camping. A second definition of camping is the blanket ban, setting up bedding from 11 to 8:30 a.m. to establish or maintain outdoors in, on, or under any structure not intended for human occupancy any time between the hours of 11 p.m. to 8:30 a.m., a temporary or permanent place for sleeping. By setting up any bedding, sleeping bag, blanket, mattress, tent, hammock, or other sleeping equipment in such a manner as to be immediately usable for sleeping purposes. And C, the setting up a campsite. This is what we call the camping ban, though the whole thing is really the camping ban. Anytime, this isn't just between 11 and 8:30, to establish or maintain outdoors in or under any structure not intended for human occupants at any time of the day or night. A temporary or permanent place for cooking or sleeping by setting up any bedding, sleeping bag, blanket, mattress, tent, hammock, or other sleeping equipment, or setting up any cooking equipment like you and Sean Alimi were notorious for doing, with the intent to remain in that location overnight. I am going to briefly take a... That's, you asked what the camping ordinance said. That's the core of the camping ordinance. There's more. It's a longer ordinance, but that is primarily the main prohibitions that essentially make it illegal for 1,500 to 2,000 homeless people tonight to sleep outside. Any comment, Pat? Other than a few shivers? Okay. I'm going to put on a little music here. Stay with us, and we'll be right back. If you want to tune in, if you want to call in, you can call in at 427-3772. We're on, I think the chat room is open. I'm not entirely sure here. It looks like it's... It may not be open, actually. I've tried to open it, but I have a little problem with that. Try to reach on air because we're not really on air, but some illegal people claim that we are on air. We would never do such a thing. So if you hear this on the radio, simply throw your radio to the ground and smash it in a few places just in case. You never can tell who might be watching you listen to this station. But, in fact, we are broadcasting on the Internet at www.freakradio.org. So give a call in if you want to be a part of this conversation, or if you want to leave a message, you can contact the Huff voicemail at 423-HUFF, 423-HUFF. Don't go away. While I fuddle around here with the appropriate equipment, I also want to remind you that you can catch archives of these shows on the Huff website, huffsantacruz.org, where these shows are regularly assembled if you want to go back and listen to them.
We've been doctor of the mind. You learn to worship the dollar sign. Every victim means money to spend. No one expects mental illness to end. Mr. Psychiatrist, I want to tell you this. Crimes which the laws allow, crimes you're committing now, are still crimes anyhow. You long for power, your goal is control. Put your DSM-3 back on the shelf, because I'd rather believe in myself. Mr. Psychiatrist, I want to tell you this. Crimes which the laws allow, crimes you're committing now, are still crimes anyhow. Mr. Psychiatrist, I want to tell you this. Crimes which the laws allow, crimes you're committing now, are still crimes anyhow. Yeah,
that was another one by Morgan Firestar. That one was called Mr. Psychiatrist. We did a show about 4 or 5 months ago about Proposition 63, which is increased funding by a tax on the rich, interestingly enough, for mental health services. And we had a debate between Jane Kaiser, who heads PIRC, Psychiatric Inmates Rights Collective, and it wasn't really a debate, but it was certainly an exchange of different views. And Sally Zeman, is that right? Or is it? I think it's Sally Zinman. She's a worker with Psychiatric Advocates, a group actually that advocates for patients and for psychiatric reform up in Berkeley and Sacramento where she works. And she was arguing in favor of Proposition 63. She felt that more funding would enable a kind of a pilot project, which is currently being used for homeless people in some counties, to be expanded significantly and provide additional voluntary services statewide. And when we got her on the air, she couldn't answer the question as to how these decisions would be made in terms of whether there would be local control over those things, what the decision-making bureaucracy looked like, how we could be sure this money wasn't going to go for more psychiatric medications and forced incarceration and so forth. And so now this Proposition 63 has passed, probably with Morgan Firestar turning in her grave. We'll have to have those two on again to talk about it again. Again, if you want to call in, phone lines are open, 427-3772. In the studio with me is Pepper Tongue Pat Ring. Pat, we talked about how Mayor Mike Rotkin, who was mayor in 96 and is again mayor now in 2004, had you arrested for defending a homeless woman in front of Santa Cruz City Hall, I guess because of some harsh words you said toward Rotkin, which might have included the words, "fuck you, Rotkin." We've talked about how Kennedy tore down signs and how Rotkin had a sign removed. We've also talked about, you and I earlier talked about the issue of when you went to court on more serious charges around the whole injunction, which Mayor Rotkin went to court to get against the vigilers. Now, my recollection of this was that the vigil began in March of 1996, right after about the time the armory was closing. And Dan Hopkins and Sean Alini, and I guess a third person started. I don't remember who his name was, but there was another person. And that person was not very prominent. Sean Alini was a food activist with a group called Feed the People that you also worked with for a while, right?
Yeah, I worked with Feed the People and Food Not Bombs. I'm sorry.
Your mic was down. Say that again.
Oh, I say I worked with Feed the People and Food Not Bombs at the same time.
And these were groups. I know Sean and when he was a very outgoing, extroverted, outspoken, and yet very jolly. I think that's the proper word. Iranian.
Manja.
He would call himself the bitch. He would say, "I'm the bitch." And he fed people, 5 days a week? And he would, Food Not Bombs was politically correct in terms of providing vegan food or vegetarian food. Old Sean Alini would whip out peanut butter and jelly sandwiches and meat and all kinds of other forbidden foods.
Whatever he could round up.
And he was the first person that I remember who was actually jailed for about a month under the sleeping ban. And around April, he was arrested because he, unlike Dan Hopkins, continued to go to sleep there. Dan was trying to stay awake at night and to sleep during the day to follow the law, which he eventually couldn't. It kind of drove him crazy. But I don't think Sean did that, did he?
No, Sean didn't. I think he was arrested 100 or ticketed or arrested like... It seems like I think the whole vigil had 100-something arrests. I think Sean had about half of them.
And I know he was held in jail. It was the first time. And the way they held him in jail was they enacted the misdemeanor provisions for the sleeping ban, which at that time, if you were arrested twice for sleeping, the second one was an automatic misdemeanor. And at that time, they could not reduce it without your permission. They had to drop the charge. If they wanted to do something, they had to drop it. Now, in 2000 or 2001, they passed a sneaky code section which allows them to reduce almost any misdemeanor in the code section, the city code section, to an infraction. So, and the significance here is that while a misdemeanor is more serious and requires you to be, they can hold you in jail on bail and so forth, which they can't really do, then an infraction, you are still entitled to a public defender and a jury trial. And so they are faced with the possibility of getting the jury either hang or say no, not guilty, which happened in your case, not around the sleeping ban, or around other issues which came out of this whole sleeping ban protest.
Yeah, it was a situation where a free speech case where we were in court for an injunction hearing where the city was trying to stop our vigil.
Let me give the background on that. Or let me ask you what the background on that. Do you recall much about that and about that attempt to get an injunction, what that was about? My recollection of it was that Rotkin wanted to make it more difficult for us. He wanted to ban all nighttime protests at City Hall. He wanted to make it so that one instance of sleeping was a misdemeanor. Not you normally had to be two, but he wanted one to be the next instance of every instance of sleeping, every instance of violating a sign law, every instance of anything would be a violation of the injunction and so a misdemeanor, because to violate an injunction is a misdemeanor in and of itself. And he soft-pedaled some of this, but some of it he didn't. He did go to court, and he did attempt in the court of Judge Stevens to get an injunction against a protest. This is the very liberal ACLU board member, Mike Rotkin, who actually we have, for those of you who may remember, if you've been listening to our show regularly, about a week and a half ago, we had an hour-and-a-half interview with Mike Rotkin, which is archived on the website, the Huff website, huffsantacruz.org. If you go there, you'll be able to see one of the shows actually talks about Rotkin as an indexed item. You can read the other one is, I think, the next show, but it hasn't been entered yet because our hardworking entry person is on vacation. But we're going to try to up that. But if you want to hear Mike Rotkin in 2004 talking about the sleeping ban, he's just about as bad as he ever was. He hasn't really changed. And I'm afraid that, your perspective is unfortunately true, Pat. But we all went to court around this injunction because we were enjoined, right?
Well, yeah, they joined the entire vigil, but then they actually named seven particular people and blamed them for the whole thing. I think we were both named.
Probably, yeah.
I know I was.
Yeah.
I think you were. If you weren't, you should have been.
John Alimi, Dan Hopkins.
You should have been, anyway. Yeah. Excuse me. And, yeah, they tried to blame the whole thing on seven people.
And this was, I remember, in the court of Judge Stevens, and there was in that court a bailiff named James Thurber, who is actually, he claims to be and may well be, the nephew of the famous writer James Thurber, yeah. The comic writer. And you've had some words with James Thurber.
I did. James Thurber is an ass. And he was really bothering people, giving them a hard time for the way they were dressed, and they were homeless people, and so I came to their defense, and it happened to have been the day after the Supreme Court said you could wear a T-shirt to court that said, fuck the police, so I turned and faced James Thurber in court, and I said, what the fuck are you looking at? And Judge Stevens asked me to leave the courtroom, and I did. And
he didn't ask you to be cited for contempt. He just said you have to leave the courtroom.
Leave the courtroom, and I complied. And I walked outside, and Thurber followed me. And apparently, before he left the courtroom, he had called for backup on his radio saying that there was a disturbance outside the courtroom. But there wasn't a disturbance outside the courtroom yet, but he knew there was soon to be one. And he followed me out and proceeded to... lay hands on me. So I turned and punched the son of a bitch right in the chest. And,
you did.
And it was on. So I was arrested. And, well, not that easily, but I was eventually arrested. And a friend of mine was also arrested. And I ended up going to court. And they charged me with 4 counts of contempt. And I had a 3-day jury trial. With the jury deliberating on the 4th day, I believe. And the jury came back on 3 counts and acquitted me. And on the 4th count, it was 11-1 to acquit, hung jury. And that was dismissed. And the prosecution had called Judge Stevens as their star witness, their last prosecuting witness. And his testimony was that I did everything I was requested to do. I complied with the court, and Mr. Thurber was out of line, and he was actually the cause of the whole problem. So, obviously, the prosecution didn't really interview him about what he was going to say, because he broke the case. And I won. And I guess you do have the right to say, what the fuck are you looking at in court?
Well, obviously, the judge has wide discretionary powers. I'm trying to find on the internet a court case about fuck the police. I'm kind of looking through as we speak. Here's one from September of 97, which was later.
My memory could be a little weird, but
I don't think it was that weird. I mean, that was a year later. Gold versus City of Miami, where a guy, the disorderly conduct which Gold was arrested consisted of Gold yelling from his car to a police officer, aren't you supposed to give them a ticket for parking in a handicapped spot? Upon seeing a woman who did not appear to be disabled to walk to her car in a handicapped space and drive away, when the police did nothing, Gold loudly remarked to no one in particular, Miami police don't do shit. And upon hearing Gold's remarks, a plainclothes officer who had been standing in the ATM line stated to the uniformed officer, I think this guy's got a problem. To this, Gold replied, I don't have a problem. I'm just saying that Miami police don't do shit. Under binding U.S. Supreme Court and Florida Supreme Court precedent existing at the time of Gold's arrest, no reasonable officer could possibly have believed that Gold's words were criminal. Gold's speech is precisely the kind that lies at the core of the First Amendment. There is nothing in the facts of this case even remotely to suggest that Gold's speech could be construed as falling within the very narrow category of fighting words or any other category of constitutionally prescribable speech. Accordingly, the officers in this case were not entitled to qualified immunity. Now, since that time, apparently immunity has been vastly expanded. Although I think police officers still have to be engaging in behavior where they believe they have probable cause for making an arrest and that they are engaged in the performance of their duties and so forth, though the city gets immunity and other agencies like the judges and the district attorney and so forth get immunity. in this, I mean, there was a whole, there was a whole court procession coming out of this in 1996. This attempt to stop the City Hall protest, which was the protest that said every night, fundamentally, we have no place else to sleep legally during the summer. There's legal space for what 40 people. In on the floors of churches, and that's still the case. 2004, people tell you that we've got a wonderful family shelter coming up. Look at them and say, how many people does it provide emergency shelter for? What percentage of the population is now sheltered? And they look, and people kind of look the other way. But the reality is, there's still 40 spaces from April through November, and tonight there's 160 spaces on the floor. But again, for I guess on the floor of churches, and I believe there are mats for people in the armory. I've been in the armory this year, so I can't have a, I don't have a clear focus on that. In the studio with me is Pat Ring, who was arrested, tried, and acquitted in court, not of sleeping, but of essentially First Amendment activity. The First Amendment activity began with posting signs at City Hall, speaking back to the mayor, and then at court in trying to essentially defend the spectators from what you regarded, I guess, was hostile.
Extremely hostile.
Repressive. How is Deputy Thurber hostile in your view?
Well, he has a long history of treating people badly, and he's several people who go nameless. He's actually beaten up in court or out in the hallways, and he's just an ass.
Well, I know that I have had my own problems, and this may make it seem like we're engaging in a character assassination of an individual, James Thurber, but it's not. I'm concerned about no, it isn't. I mean, I'm concerned about misconduct by police officers. And
yeah.
I want to say this. I haven't heard of any specific – I probably actually have, but I don't recall the specifics of any recent abuses by Thurber. So if anybody has, I certainly would like to know about it and give a call into this line or to the Huff line, 423-HUFF. This is the line here again is 427. This is in the studio in Free Radio Santa Cruz, 427-3772. But I myself had problems with the deputy when he, in 1992, I believe I was trying to record one of the cases of Robert Flory or Wanton Dave Jacobs, activists who were, might have been Linda Edwards, who were dealing with the sleeping ban through numerous means. They tried things like they would plead guilty, and then they would refuse to pay their fine, and they would say, you know, sue me. Civilly, because you can't go after me further because it's an infraction. But I would regularly record these sessions, and I would do so after filing a specific permission request with the judge. It was actually an informational assertion that I was, you know, I'd like to under 980C rules of court, now 980D, that I wanted to make a recording. And Thurber was the bailiff in the same court, I believe, that you and I were in when 3 years later you were, you know, dealing with this injunction at City Hall thing. And Thurber refused to take my request for court reporting. So I wanted to know his name, the name of his superior. And he wouldn't, he either wouldn't tell me or I took a piece of paper from his desk to write down his name. He then arrested me for theft of a piece of paper and three other charges. And all the charges, of course, never saw the light of day. They were all dropped. And I took him to court civilly, and I lost the case. I want to be candid about that. So someone might say that, you know, bailiff and Deputy Thurber was justified, or at least he was not found to be civilly liable. Anyway, what's this all about? This is about the broader issue is not, you know, how many mayors or deputies can we badmouth by name, and we've gone through a few, but what's happened since in the last 8 years? You left town in 96, or you were in town in 96, very actively involved. You haven't been hoboing all over the country. You've been working at the Mercury News and elsewhere, doing other things, regular 9-to-5 work.
Well, I went off to save the world. I went up to Headwaters Forest, worked up there for 2 years, mm-hmm. Trying to save Headwaters Forest. No compromise in defense of Mother Earth, or as Sierra Club says, no defense in the compromise of Mother Earth.
Oh, that's Sierra Club. But let's not get into that. And then you turned to less radical pursuits. And
I got married and I had a kid and had to get a job. And one thing led to another.
But you're back, and you know,
back,
you
and I'm a daddy.
You remember, you're, you know, that puts more responsibilities, of course, on top of you. But have you? And you're not homeless. You've got means, and but you probably have. You sound like you have the same kind of hostility toward these laws that criminalize homeless people.
I'm not sure hostility is the way to put it, but I do believe that we have a right to sleep. We have a right to eat. And they've criminalized those things in the last 10 or 20 years to where you can't lay down and sleep at night if you don't have a home. And that's not a criminal act. That's a right. And they've in many places have criminalized the act of dumpster diving to where somebody has to eat out of a dumpster. I mean, it's bad enough that they have to do that. Now they've made it a criminal act. And that's just wrong. I mean, that's just ridiculous. And we just have these certain rights that we need to uphold, and whether I'm homeless or not, and I'm going to defend those rights.
When you look back on this 96 stuff, I mean, I do this occasionally. I was talking to another activist this morning and just trying to, you know, brooding on what if anything has been accomplished, or how do you sum up what happened that to you that year? I mean, do you think it was a useless series of activities you engaged in? Do you feel that, and you know, I'm not trying to get a yes or no answer. I want to know what your real answer is. I'll take it on the chin one way or the other. Is it something you think you would not do now if you knew the consequences? Is it something that we did? What did you learn from this many months struggle to decriminalize sleep?
Well, you're not going to like everything I have to say.
Go for it.
I think I would do it again. I think I might do it again. I also think that people got to get their ass up off the sidewalk, quit begging, try to help themselves before I'm going to be able to help them. You know, change comes from within, not spare change. They have to change, you know, and you know, get off the fucking drugs. Get off the booze. Get a life.
Would you say that you have a different perspective than you did in 96, or was that your perspective then, too?
It's a little different. I had a certain amount of that back then. I have a lot more of that now. You know, I'll help. If you want to help yourself a little, I'll help as much as I can. If you're just sitting there begging, I don't have any respect for you, unless you have a reason. I mean, obviously, some people are unable to help themselves. Those are the people I'm willing to help. If you're unable to help yourself or you're willing to help yourself, I'll help. If you're just, you know, wanting me to help you and while you're sitting there on your freaking ass, no. I had a situation where I was moving and I came to town and I tried to get homeless people. I was going to pay them $100 and lodging and yada, yada, yada. And I couldn't get one single person to help me. They all had some excuse. So, you know, a lot of people are homeless for different reasons. And I think the people that want to improve their station in life do. And those that don't. So I'm not really willing to help the people that don't want to help themselves anymore.
Mm-hmm. What about this law we focused on and the tactics we used, which were kind of we weren't really engaging in civil disobedience. We were actually using supposedly constitutionally protected behavior, but we were getting arrested and harassed anyway. I mean, I suppose some would say that when a person fell asleep at City Hall there, that was civil disobedience or that was a violation of the law. I don't think it was intended in the Thoreau-ish type fashion to, you know, or in the Gandhian-like way. We're violating the sleeping ban so that we may satyagraha you and throw the shame at you if you arrest us. Although some people did that, and there was some of that. I think Robert Flory was doing that kind of thing. He was one of the activists at the time. But a lot of people were just saying, let's show the public just how absurd this is. Let's embarrass the city and the merchants. Though we were in this sort of out-of-the-way place. City Hall in Santa Cruz is not on the main drag. It's not where tourists usually go. It's across from the library, but it's not on Pacific Avenue, which was kind of made put out of the picture by the downtown ordinances. You can't lie down at all. I'm going to ask Pat here as soon as he's had an opportunity to take a breather. And why don't we take a breather with yet another song from Morgan Firestar. Stay with us. And that was Morgan Firestar, and the song was Institution Trilogy. Well, on the line with us is Valerie Christie, activist, musician with SAFE, Society for Artistic Freedom and Expression. And what's cooking, Valerie?
Well, you know, it's been awfully rainy and windy, and it's going to be kind of hard to have petitions out there tonight, unfortunately. We have Mary Michael on the way with hot chocolate and peanut butter and jelly on the street. For those who are walking around, probably got tired of hiding from the rain all day, maybe they find somebody to talk to and might just get a bite to eat. So.
Wow, where is this going to be? At the usual place in front of Borders on Pacific Avenue?
Well, you know, in front of New Leaf, we had a SAFE meeting last night, and we kind of got rained out, and we decided to play music across the street at an alcove. And that's where he's going, where he could stay out of the rain and sit out there on a bucket and play some music. And he's got a sign out there that says that it's put together by Huff and SAFE.
So this is right across from the Del Mar Theater, if I'm not mistaken.
In a sense, yeah.
It's on the corner. I don't know what the name of that store is. It used to be Palookaville, right?
Palookaville was just down the street from that corner, right?
Huh.
That corner had like some kind of card shop at one time, but it's all closed right now. There's nothing there. So.
Isn't it raining outside?
Well,
there?
Right now it's basically very windy. You know, it's been pouring on and off, and yet. Michael found a break, and he's out there. And so, you know, we send good thoughts to his, I don't know, I feel like, I don't know if it's courage or, I don't know, just some kind of a interesting energy to be wanting to go out there and feed a bunch of people on the street. And I guess, you know, being somebody who actually lives there also, it's kind of interesting, you know, because there's a lot of homeless people who just hang out. Well, here's a homeless person who goes out and makes food for people and plays music for people. He's a pretty creative person.
Well, they don't call him Meriwether Michael for nothing.
I guess, you know.
Well, maybe he's a little confused.
Very inspirational.
It's not very Meriwether. What's he doing out there, would be my question. I guess he's out there to spread some merriment.
Yeah, you know, he didn't answer me about that. He was making hot cocoa in my house, and I guess appreciating the fact that he could make a meal and maybe share it with his brothers, so, you know, and sisters and on the street. So, hey, you know, hats off to him, man. More people like him in the world, I think we'd have a really cool world.
Hats off and ponchos on. Stay out of
the
rain,
Robert,
off.
Of course.
Any comments on, we've actually, our guest, Pat Ring, has taken off into the storm, hopefully not to freeze. He was literally soaked when he came in tonight. But
wow.
You've been listening to the show?
Yes, I have.
Any comments, anything you've heard? Or?
I would just say that I am so happy that the radio is being so informative, and I think that it's really a great thing that Huff is right down here on the street making contact with people as well as out on the airwaves. And I think we just keep touching different bases. We're gonna be like everywhere, man. Maybe one day we'll be on TV or something.
Well, this is an unpaid political announcement, obviously. And,
well, I'm pretty inspired. I guess I'm just happy to know that I have people that are working for other people other than themselves once in a while.
Hear, hear. Well, thank you, Valerie, and keep us advised. If you hear any reports from the street that you want to call in on, please do. We're, of course, as you know, on the air for an hour and 10 minutes. If you can find a radio to broadcast, you're always welcome to pick it up, although, of course, we would have nothing to do with radio broadcasting. We merely go out on the net, as you know.
Yeah. Well, that's it. See, we've spread now to computers. It just goes to show you we're everywhere, man.
Here, here. Hey, thank you, Valerie.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Have a good night.
Bye-bye. And, yes, you too can call in, 427-3772. I'm Robert Norris. This is Bathrop Spears Broadsides coming to you on the net at www.freakradio.org, being rebroadcast, I understand, in various places, one of them being 101.1 FM somewhere, somehow, by somebody, thank you or no thank you, as the case may be. I actually am happy that it's happening. I'm glad to hear that this information is getting out. I've talked in the past about Jerry Henry, an activist who, he doesn't really call himself an activist. He's a street minister. Last time I saw him, he was in a priest's cowl, brown, kind of looked like a Franciscan monk. And I saw him in the corridors of the court. I think it was actually about, was it a week ago? Only a week ago? Last Friday? Maybe it was 2 weeks ago Friday. It was either a week or 2 weeks ago Friday. And he was dealing with this whole business at the Rancho Del Mar Shopping Center of being banned from being in front of the coffee roasting company, the Aptos Coffee Roasting Company, and facing the possibility of further action by Paul Maraganda, who is a public nuisance, you might say. He's a prosecutor. He's also the mayor of Scotts Valley, interestingly enough. And he was reportedly taking... recommending more charges against Jerry Henry, who essentially is being pursued by sheriffs and some merchants at the Rancho Del Mar Shopping Center, want him barred and banned for essentially resisting their get out, go away, shut up, don't advise young people there that you have the right to sit here, you have the right to cluster, you have the right to be engaged in First Amendment activity inside a shopping center, which they do. And Huff has taken a position on this, supporting Jerry Henry, a week and a half ago. We also have been scouting out the protest terrain. We found some interesting, I guess you'd call them rules of protest that they have. And I should have brought them into the studio. I don't think I have them with me, but they are amazing. They require you to apply 7 weeks in advance. They only allow you to protest during certain hours. You can have only one sign. I mean, it's amazingly absurd and nothing that I would agree to. And so we're probably going to be, you know, who knows? We may find ourselves in a position like Jerry Henry, being dragged off to court, not because we want to interfere with businesses, but we do want to interfere with business as usual if their business as usual is violating the First Amendment and enforcing a kind of merchant police fascist connection, where fascism, of course, is where the police and the merchants make the laws and the rest of us get to be good consumers or shut up and go home. Anyway, Jerry Henry went to court, and I'm going to play a little bit about that. This was the next day, however, in spite of the court decision that essentially validated his right to be in the shopping center, and his right to go to the Pacific Coffee Company in the next shopping center, the Aptos Center. He was arrested anyway and held on $50,000 bail, and that's a story I've talked about several times on the air as well. But here is some of the discussion with Jerry Henry and other folks in the corridors of the court area. I think it was a week ago Friday.
Have you been recording me?
No.
No, he has to let you know.
It is, December 16th, 17th already.
17th.
We are in the halls of the...
Remind me, I'm going nuts.
Corridor of Justice here, about 10:20, 10:15, on a break outside Department 2, talking with Attorney Kate Wells. Kate, are you here as an attorney or as a spectator?
I am here as a supporter.
And who are you supporting? What criminal band of miscreants are you assisting?
The freedom fighters who would have a place to be in Aptos.
And to whom are you referring?
Right now?
Yes.
Jerry Henry.
And why is Jerry here and called to court today? What's going on?
Well, do you want the philosophical answer or do you want the legal answer?
Both.
Philosophically, he's here because he looks different. And he doesn't quite fit in with the scene in Aptos.
He's wearing a monk's robes today.
Yeah. And the legal reason is that they have cited him for trespass.
Interfering with a business, not for trespass. It looks like a trespass statute, but it's not.
All right. Well, I didn't know. I wasn't sure. But interfering with a business.
Right here,
by just basically sitting outside the business and warning people
what they might face if they go inside.
They might face the problems if they enter here.
And I understand he was held on $25,000 bail on that.
Eileen would probably be able to tell you better than I, because they're the ones that put up the bail.
Eileen, your name is?
I'm Eileen. I'm Jerry's mother. And at one time, he was held on $100,000 bail. And then this last time, a $25,000 bail.
Because he shot three people and then headed for the state line? Or
no. trespassing or interfering with
business.
It's
somebody looking funny.
Well, we don't have a sense of humor about that, if you don't mind. Now,
and it was a Friday afternoon, and I, at 4 o'clock when I got the message, I think they were a little surprised that it could raise a $25,000 cash bail. Wow. So I really expected it to be raised to $100,000. That's what had happened before.
Interesting, because I know that I heard before that he had twice before been held on $100,000 bail. Is that right?
Well, only to my knowledge, once before on $100,000, but the bail bondsman said if you posted that, by the time he walked out into the lobby,
it would be $200,000.
They would raise it, and it would not include that $100,000. It would be that $100,000 plus.
Well, they're short of money. You know, they do need money these days.
And he advised me not to tie my house up for that length of time. And he even so, I felt it was a very honest bail bondman. So it was Friday afternoon or night. And from the, if you arrest them on Friday, I think they have to wait until Tuesday to see the judge. So he was held
over the weekend.
Yes.
I'm going to head out there with the miscreants.
The smokers. That's another aspect. Hasn't smoking been prohibited outside the Rancho Del Mar?
No, there is no county ordinance that prohibits smoking outside. There is a city ordinance that says that, but no county ordinance.
City of Santa Cruz, but that is, in Aptos, which is outside the city.
Exactly.
But we know that our guardians of, the public health have insisted that individuals not smoke outside the roasting company and posted signs to that effect.
Well, yeah, but, I mean, I can post a sign, you know, on my block that says, no cars allowed, and is that going to make a difference?
What about a sign here, no justice allowed?
No justice allowed, yeah. Okay, I got to go out there because we've got a missing witness.
Get that missing witness. Can I ask you another question or two? Or this
maybe
is for free radio. Oh, I can ask them, but you don't have to answer them. How long have you and your family lived here in the Aptos area? I can say, we're not in the Aptos area, but nearby.
77.
And you...
77. Yes.
So, when...
77.
What do you make of this whole situation? I mean, you know, you're here in court today. It must matter some stress for you, I imagine.
Other than the death of my son, one of my sons, and the death of my sister, this is the most stressful event of our life. And with that, I don't think I'll discuss it anymore.
Thank you very much, and good luck to you today.
Thank you.
So we're talking to Scott Rhodes. Scott, you last time I talked to you was downtown on the mall.
Was it?
I think so.
I would imagine.
You've actually written about the Jerry Henry case in the past.
Oh, yeah, I've written numerous things.
Did you come back coincidentally or specifically for this hearing?
Both specifically for the hearing, and it's a great opportunity to see the people that I knew when I lived here a year ago and 3 years ago.
Now, you yourself have...
And it should be pointed out, Scott Rhodes, who is an attendant of Jerry Henry's, came all the way back from Colorado for this hearing back on December 17th.
Encountered the same kind of problems Jerry has at the coffee roasting company. Isn't that true?
Yeah. Yeah, I would say I've encountered all the same, but I've encountered the attitude that, and the hatefulness that has led to so much of his problems there.
How long have you known Jerry?
Since year 2000, 4 years.
Did you meet just independently of this, or did it happen around the coffee roasting company?
Meet Jerry?
Yeah.
I met Jerry downtown, actually.
When he was doing food distribution?
Yeah, food distribution and his street ministry. I met him down on in front of New Leaf, in the area that is now Sushi Now's or whoever.
Fresco's and the Cafe Campesino's privatized area during the day.
Right there.
Although they've been pretty mellow about letting the public use it, I must say. So.
Have they?
Unlike the previous owners, Alibaba and Matisse Selman of Sushi Now.
Yes, I remember both of them very well.
Now, you've actually written about this situation. I know you wrote a flyer about it about a year ago, about discrimination at Rancho Del Mar?
Yeah. Yeah, I like I said, I've written numerous things, letters and flyers. I've written letters to the editor and things in the paper and handouts and things like that.
Tell me about your own personal contact with the roasting company and how it's impacted you.
Well, my own personal contact has been minimal compared to others. I haven't spent a great deal of time in the place by any means, and I found myself very
and I believe we're going to pause now while the tape turns over. Actually, I'll just stop it and start playing it the other way. You're tuned to Free Radio, or Freak Radio, if you will, www.freakradio.org. We are streaming on the net.
Myself to be very unacceptable to them very quickly, within just spending a few minutes in there over the matter of a couple days, just because I'm associated with Jerry. I was his aide at the time.
When was this?
It was 2001 and 2002. I would go into the Rancho Shopping Center from time to time, and then into 2003. You know,
Jerry was banned by court judgment from the shopping center in a case that's still under appeal,
right,
under public nuisance charges, essentially kind of a campaign of harassment against him by the Rancho, the sheriff's substation, the former Gottschalks, and a number of other local businesses.
Right.
Court is reopening here.
Yeah.
Good luck. I wish us all luck. We're talking juggler, and we won't talk to you about your charges unless you want to, but...
And that's other interviews at the court, some of which are very interesting and some of which we're going to be playing. If you want to comment on anything you've heard, and you're welcome to, you can give a call to 427-3772. We had hoped, Huff members had hoped, to do a protest out at the Rancho Del Mar Shopping Center in front of the Aptos Roasting Company and maybe also at the Santa Cruz Roasting Company, as well as the Pacific Coffee Company, which is about a block up at the Aptos Center, where apparently people can get arrested for simply looking different, as Kate Wells put it, and or publicizing how businesses are treating people who look different. And that we wanted to, and I think that is going to be coming up shortly on the Huff calendar once we have the literature together and the people ready to do it. Plus, it appears this is a rather militant group of merchants who don't mind shredding the Constitution in order to go after a disfavored people like Jerry Henry, like Richard Quigley, who's also been on the air and talked about these issues. It remains to be seen what's going to happen, but it may be a number of us may also be in court before this is over. Hopefully not. Hopefully the whole issue can be resolved in a more amiable and open kind of way through dialogue. But Colleen Crosby, who is the owner of the roasting company, that the company that is the Santa Cruz Coffee Roasting Company, the Aptos Coffee Roasting Company, not the Pacific Coffee Roasting Company, I don't think, but the other two, has not returned two calls, and I think she must be ignoring them, or perhaps she's out of town on business. It's hard to tell. But and I've also attempted to reach her in the past on this issue, and she's friendly enough in person when I talk to her, but she obviously has no interest in, seems to have no interest in resolving it, at least hasn't recently. And as the situation has gotten more intense, $25,000 bail, $50,000 bail, the situation becomes more grotesque, more alarming to a lot of us, and more pressing. Anyone who wants to is welcome to call in and talk about this. While you're trying to find your telephone or looking for phone change, here's a little music to keep you company.
Trap you in a role.
and that's Incarceration by Morgan Firestar. About 2 or 3 weeks ago, somebody called into this show, I think it was Bob LaMonica, to talk about wondering why local progressive Santa Cruz activists who had protested the arrival of chains like the Gap and Borders weren't also turning their sights on the Trader Joe's that's happening downtown that's recently opened up on Front Street. And one of the comments I got from other callers was that this doesn't really compete with other stores in the same way that, let's say, Borders competes with Coonerty's Bookshop Santa Cruz and other small bookstores. And although Bookshop Santa Cruz seems to be doing fine, I haven't gotten a report from Bookshop Santa Cruz. I'm not allowed in there. I haven't been allowed in there for 8 years, 9 years, 10 years now, actually, since 1994, on order of Neil Coonerty. But I have not patronized Borders here in town. I don't believe in it because I do believe they tend to destroy the local stores when they come in. I've seen bookstores disappear and read credible reports on that. But what about Trader Joe's? Well, the store that might be affected by Trader Joe's is Shopper's Corner. It kind of covers some of the same territory, so I drove up to Shopper's Corner and should have walked or perhaps biked, but you know me. And I went up there and ran into the owner who consented to an interview, and this is the interview with Shopper's Corner.
Okay. So I'm at Shopper's Corner, and it's about 10 to 11 on December 18th. The 17th or the 18th? Not sure.
18th. Hey, how you doing?
And I'm speaking to the owner of Shopper's Corner. He's telling me there are significant differences between Shopper's Corner and Trader Joe's that actually have resulted in no particular fall-off in business here. Is that accurate?
Right.
And you have, you say, how many thousand wines here?
We have like 3,000, yeah.
And they have about 300?
300 or 400, yeah.
And you also have open produce, and you have 14 butchers cutting meat.
I don't think they have any butchers. It's all packaged meat, so.
And you've been here for how many years?
65 years.
So no problem, is what you're saying?
No, I mean, there's something there for everybody. I've got no problem with Trader Joe's.
You patronize Trader Joe's?
I've been in there before, yeah. Not to the new one, no. I shop in Shopper's Corner. Find everything I want.
No, you want to go to Trader Joe's, not Shopper's Corner.
Yeah.
Again, your name is?
Jim Beauregard.
And you are, in fact, the owner of the store.
That's true, yeah.
Well, what else does Shopper's Corner have that, let's say, you wouldn't find at Trader Joe's?
Customer service, probably. It's pretty overwhelming at Shopper's. The 14 butchers, fresh-cut meat. You know, wide variety of produce.
And when the recession hit, or I should say the after 2001, did you find a fall off in business, or were you still doing pretty much the same?
There was a fall off on high end products, high end wines, mainly. A little bit of the meat prices went up around the same time, so the meat fell off a bit, maybe 10%, but overall not too much.
And how is the business this year, let's say, compared with last year at this time?
Our business is up. We've got long-term customers. We're working on fourth-generation customers. So we're fortunate to have that base.
Any kind of concluding comments for the folks out there about the grocery business generally, or anything about being a Santa Cruz business, the kind of difficulties or advantages it has?
I think everybody should shop where they're happiest shopping, where they can find everything for one-stop shopping, and that's Shoppers. I know that for a fact.
Well, thank you, Jim.
You're welcome.
Okay, we're at the checkout line talking with...
I've been working here 44 years.
And what's your name?
My name is Dorothy Powell.
And Dorothy, you're not just saying that because the owner is standing next to you.
No, I'm afraid not. No, it doesn't make no tell. I've been here 44 years.
And how's Jim been treating you?
Jim is a wonderful boss.
He's moved away, so we're getting a candid view.
Well, no, he's a wonderful boss.
And you were telling me earlier that you don't see any fall-off in business. Jim didn't either.
Huh?
No fall-off in business in the last week or two.
Well, the first few days we had some. Uh-huh. We're bound to have some.
Right. What do you like about working here the best?
I like the people, the customers working. I like all of this, and besides, it keeps me young.
Well, I can see that, cutie. Now, what do you dislike? Let's put it this way. What do you think could be improved? What would you like to see change?
It's the real test, folks.
I don't see nothing to disprove, you know. The store is fine. I can...
Yeah. And...
I'm happy here.
There's no union here.
No.
But you're okay. Have you got benefits of any kind?
Yes, we have health benefits and everything.
And what, if you get sick, what happens? How much of your... What kind of a plan?
Well, we got health, you know, sick days and all of that. We got all of that. Vacation time.
You seem to have a close... is it a family business? And I mean, how secure is your job?
It's as secure as any job after 44 years. I mean...
Okay. Anything else you want to say for Free Radio?
I don't want to retire.
No, you're just going to keep on. We got all this booze behind you. I mean, if times get tough, you can always swig some of that Seagram.
I could have retired years ago, but I'm not. Not for me.
You like it? You like working?
And besides, it keeps me nice and young.
Damn right. So, what are you doing tonight?
Huh?
I said, what are you doing tonight?
What am I doing today?
Tonight.
Oh, I'm getting ready to go to South Dakota. To see my son, I'm leaving early in the morning.
So much for my late night dancing plans.
No dancing plans. I got to get up and leave at 4:45.
Well, good luck in South Dakota. Don't get snowed under in there. And again, we've been talking with.
Nice talking to you.
What's your name again?
Dorothy Powell.
Thanks, Dorothy. All right. We actually have a 40-year customer who does not want to be interviewed, but she has been shopping for 40 years nonetheless.
I have to tell you, my daughter moved to Chicago and missed Shopper's Corner so much that she took a picture of it and had it on her refrigerator.
Now, this is the only Shopper's Corner. There's not another one. This is just the only one in the world. This is the unique Shopper's Corner in Santa Cruz. What do you think? You're a checker here. How long have you been checking?
I'm a bagger.
You're a bagger. I'm sorry. She's the checker. You're the bagger.
Yeah.
How are they treating you?
Good. Really good.
How old are you?
15.
How long have you been doing this?
About 3 weeks.
And your name is?
Corey.
Corey. Any other comment?
No. It's just that I really like it here, and everyone's really friendly.
What kind of a wage do you get?
What kind of a what?
Wage.
I think $7.50 an hour.
Thank you. So Gloria, you've got the money in hand. You're a checker, right?
Right.
But you're a checker for a number of years.
Well, yeah. Here it's just 17 years.
17 years, and you're still 39, like Jack Benny.
Yeah.
So what about Shopper's Corner keeps you working here?
Well, it's a local store, and it has everything in here that people like that they can't get other places. And we the customers do come in here, and they're really pleasant to work with. You know, we help them out, and then that's what they like, and we take the groceries out for them, and so. And it's just like a family here. It's a
good health plan.
Yeah.
How's your health been?
Mine's been good.
Children?
I have two boys.
Grandchildren?
I have six.
Great grandchildren?
One.
Whoa! I'm not gonna ask you what year you were born.
Well, 24.
Really?
Yeah.
And a lot of younger checkers, and I guess how many employees are really old time employees? Would you say?
There's not too many of them here now. Most of them retired. Mm-hmm. And let's see. Well, the other girl's here. She's been here almost 20 years, but she's not here today. Her name is Susan. And so Dorothy and I are really about the oldest ones here. That's the only one.
What would you like to see change at Shopper's Corner if you wanted to see anything change?
Well, nothing really.
It's a loaded question because the boss may be listening.
Well, he has a change. He made a lot of changes. You know, he remodeled here about 5 or 6 years ago, maybe a little longer.
The original question I had when I came to the store is, has Trader Joe's impacted the business here, do you think?
No.
You don't think it will?
No, the reason why I don't think so, because they don't have a meat counter like we do. And a lot of people don't like a meat package, so they always come in here. But, you know, there'll be people going over there for a while, like they did, and then they'll come back. We're not worried about them, because we had the grocery stores over here, the big ones. Like the Albertsons and stuff. They never bothered us. so people still come in here.
Loyal clientele.
Yeah, we had a lot of loyal ones, right.
I know there's some people concerned about, like, Borders, the bookstore, destroying other bookstores in town.
Yeah.
In fact, choosing a location like two or three blocks from a bookstore and then just taking away. Trader Joe's, some say, is not like that.
No. And then, you know, a lot of people like to buy their groceries from regular, you know, like this store here is privately owned. It's not a chain outfit. A lot of people like that because it's not a chain outfit. And Trader Joe's is a chain outfit. They're all over.
Yeah, they are. They look the same wherever you go.
Yeah.
I mean, I like some of the stuff they have there, but in fact, I just bought something today. But
yeah.
I also bought something from Shopper's Corner.
Oh, good.
Well, anything else you want to say to our free radio audience?
No, not really. I think we summed it up pretty good. Yeah.
And we've been talking with...
Pardon?
Your name again is...
Oh, Gloria. Gloria Kelly.
Thanks, Gloria.
You're welcome.
Appreciate you taking the time.
Okay, thank you.
So that was some reaction from Shopper's Corner about the claim that Trader Joe's may be impacting them. They don't think so. And I imagine if they did, they would probably say so. Certainly Neil Coonerty of Bookshop Santa Cruz said so about Borders. And indeed, he was so concerned about competition that I understand he wrote into the lease of the Cooper House the proviso that there be no bookstore allowed to rent space in that building. That isn't something I've verified independently, but that I've heard. If anybody has any more information on that, yay or nay, I'd like to hear about that. Or if you have any reactions to anything you've heard, 423-4833 is the number of this show. This is Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides. I'm Robert Norse. This is the last 45 minutes of Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides. I'm going to turn now to one of my favorite impressionists, Rich Little, from an old album of his, which I only have a part of. I actually had the whole record, and then the record disappeared, and then I had an old tape which broke, and I have part of the tape. It's called Politics and Popcorn. And for people under the age of 35, you probably can forget it. But if you're over the age of 50, all you old-timers, youngsters get lost. Or you might find this interesting if you're a fan of old movies, whatever age you are. This is a guy who does all kinds of different voices of old actors. And so I'm going to play him now as a comic interlude. So stay with us and pass the popcorn.
You know, I've been studying old films for years. I love them, and that's how an impressionist learns to do impressions. Well, after seeing so many old films so many times, I got kind of thinking about doing one myself, like a Western. Now, I've always wanted to do a great old Western with a big train robbery in it. Let's round up some real Western types. Walter Brennan, Kurt Douglas, Burt Lancaster, Gary Cooper, James Arness, Glenn Ford, and a little local color from my old pal, Henry Fonda. Well, sir, it was in the winter of 78 when me and Ephraim, Virgil, Wyatt, Twilly, and Toop was riding the Oregon Trail between Chisholm and where Three Rivers meet in Broken Spur. My pa, Coley, was chasing wild pigs up at Salt Ridge between Carson City and Medicine Hat when he got snake bite. Well, he spent the rest of the winter sucking his leg in a cave. When he come out, a hungry Pawnee bit off the hang-me-down part of his left ear. Later, he went near mad from black fly bites up near Parsons Notch, spent the rest of the summer getting leached and wondering where his next bite was coming from. Well, then me and the boys rode into Clampertville and come out with four sticks of dynamite Crazy Doc Dawson had thrown into a pot on the last hand of a game of seven-toed Pete. So we moseyed on down to the tracks to rob the Santa Fe. All right, get ready. Here comes the train just clickety-clackety-clackety-clicking down the track.
Yeah, I know what you're coming, God dang it. All them trains go clickety-clackety-clackety-click. Now get your guns ready.
Chuck, I hear some trains go tooty-toot-toot.
Well, that's right.
And I hear other trains go chuggity-chug-chug.
I know that, Conshawnet. I know they go clickety-clack and toot-toot-toot and chuggity-chug-chug. Now, which one's a mail car?
Well, now, wait a minute. Some trains go
that right, too? Which trains go shh?
Well, they go shh when they're standing in the station. That's when.
I know they go shh when they're standing in the station and clickety-click and toot-toot-toot and chuggity-chug-chug when they eat.
Now get your masks ready.
Well, some trains go bibbity-bobbity, bobbity-bibbity-bibbity.
And I just a second, Twilly. When do trains go bibbity-bobbity, bobbity-bibbity-bibbity?
Well, they go bibbity-bobbity, bobbity-bibbity-bibbity when they're crossing the trestle. That's when.
Dagnabbit, I know they go bibbity-bobbity when they're crossing the trestle and shh when they're standing in the station and clickety-click and toot-toot-toot and chuggity-chug when they eat.
You know, what's happening to the train? Why ain't he stopping?
What, didn't you see us? Come back here!
Hold it. Pardon me for interrupting, but what are you going to do for the rest of the afternoon?
Oh, let's go and rustle some cattle. That would be nice. You know, I hear cattle go clompity-clomp-clomp. Isn't that marvelous?
Oh, shut up. You can't stop a train. We ain't going to stop no cattle.
Remember the Great War, World War II, the one that was supposed to end all wars? All wars not ended by World War I, I guess. Well, remember the Great War movies? You know, the ones in which bombers landed with prayers instead of wings? I thought of what might really have happened if Hollywood hadn't been so busy reminding us what we were fighting for. So I put good hometown actors like Dana Andrews, Alan Ladd, John Wayne, Bill Holden, Gregory Peck, Clark Gable, Glenn Ford, up in the Betty Grable, a beat-up B-29 bomber flying somewhere over the South Pacific.
How many ships can you make
up? Boy, a lot more than you can put in your bathtub, Captain.
Golly, there's a big gray job with three little chimneys over there. Yeah, but how many all together?
Well, let's see now. One, two, three... That's four.
Wouldn't it be weird if we suddenly spotted a giant bar of soap?
How about a rubber duck?
Now, let's be serious, men. We've got a job to do for all our friends and neighbors back in Cornsville. Mr. Tips, a corner grocer. Mr. Davis, a druggist. Mr. Carter, the same-day dry cleaner.
Sure. Old Walt Davis. 213, 214, 215.
Molly and Bill Drake at the corner bakery shop.
Let's get one for Molly and Bill.
How about pretty Kitty Weaver at the Busy Bee Luncheonette? Did you ever make out with Kitty?
332, 333, 334.
Hey, let's get one for Myrtle, the long-distance operator.
And Miss Katie. Oh, yes, dear Miss Katie.
Who's Miss Katie?
My ninth-grade homeroom teacher.
Oh, did you have her, too? I had Mr. Bopert in room 402.
Now, Bopert was in 406. I remember it was 406. You're wrong in that.
Nope. 406 was Mr. Daly's homeroom. Bopert was in 402. 403. 404.
Oh, for heaven's sakes, please stop counting while I'm counting, will you, fellas? How many you got now, Alan?
Oh, about 430, sir. You want me to count the airplanes, too?
Airplanes?
Oh, yeah. I see them now. Seems like a whole bunch taking off from those six big flatboats over there.
Yeah.
Say, that is tough.
I couldn't say. Wasn't Peck in charge of bombs?
No, not me, brother. That was Alan's job. I'm in charge of bullets.
Well, how many bullets have we got?
Well, I didn't bring any. Nope. Didn't think bullets would be any good for boats.
Not any bullets at all?
Nope, didn't bring any. Didn't think they'd be good on boats.
Well, let's ask Alan about the bombs.
Okay, how many bombs we got, Alan? I don't think we've got enough.
Not enough, huh, Pappy?
Nope, not enough. Now listen, guys, let's go back and get some bullets. You know, for the planes.
You know, we should have figured on bullets for the planes.
Sure, Pappy, I guess you're bound to find some planes on your big flat boats, huh?
I hope we make it back in time for mail call.
Yeah, maybe there's a letter from Ellen Clapper with a lipstick kiss on the backside.
Did you ever make it with Ellen Clapper?
And that was some Rich Little from, God, 30 years ago, something like that. Hope it was enjoyable for those of you who enjoy those old things. The Human Rights Organization is a group that meets, well, it hasn't been meeting over the vacation area time period here during Christmas and New Year's, but it is usually it meets on Saturdays at 4 o'clock at the Union Cafe, or at the Union. And it's a group concerned with ending the sleeping ban and ending the downtown ordinances. And a couple of weeks ago, they put on quite a show, a fundraiser, that actually raised a total of, either $1,800 or $170, depending on how you look at it. There was a large contribution that had already been expected to come into the campaign to take the sleeping ban to court, which is the main project that Huff is doing these days when it's not running around trying to protect the rights of people outside the coffee roasting company and so forth, or expose police misconduct. And Kate Wells was a speaker at a human rights organization fundraiser, and I'm going to kind of break into the middle of that event and play a little bit of what she was saying, because some people who were there found it very inspirational, and it's a matter of some interest when an attorney takes off time from her work to come on down and speak. She's not getting paid for any of this stuff. She's putting in free time, as Attorney Kate Wells has for years. So here's Kate talking at the human rights organization. It was on the second floor of the Vets building that we had this little affair. It was Monday before last, I believe. Or maybe it was even last Monday. With all the holiday punch, I can't be sure.
We have a flyer for it all together, but Kate, why don't you go ahead and tell us what happened?
Well, basically, what's happening in downtown Santa Cruz is mirrored in what's happening in Aptos. Basically, it has to do with something we thought we kind of took care of in the 60s, and that is discrimination against looks, appearance. Jerry Henry, those of you who haven't seen Jerry, he has a very long beard. He is now taken to wearing Franciscan robes. He's a street minister, and he doesn't really look like your regular Aptos citizen. That's his major crime, and really the government should be pinning a medal on Jerry Henry, because what he does is he helps kids who are in trouble. And he has been successful in getting several kids off of heroin. And what he does is provide a bridge between an older generation and a younger generation that needs somebody to talk to them. When they put the sheriff's substation down in the Aptos Rancho Del Mar Shopping Center, the stated purpose was to finish what First Alarm had started, which is to chase off all the kids, get them out of there, and the riffraff. They have cut off their noses, spite their face. The coffee roasting company has eliminated all outdoor seating just so that they don't have to have any kids there. Kids not doing anything horrible. Kids being kids, talking, interacting, playing chess, playing checkers, you know. And when the sheriff's department first came in, Jerry and several of the young boys and girls went to the then head of that substation, which was David Deverell, now retired, and said, "Hey, come in, come out and sit down and play a game of checkers with us." And it was just immediate, you know, absolutely not, you know, and from then on, it's been this, you know, constant battle, and really, the kids are, you know, the kids would be, you know, carrying a skateboard, and the sheriff would come along and grab it out of their arms, and of course Jerry would say, "You can't do that, you know, there's no reason for you to do that." They would walk up to these kids and immediately just shine a light in their eyes. "Are you on drugs? Are you on drugs?" Jerry said, "You can't do that." Well, obviously, he really ingratiated himself with the sheriff's department, and there has been this constant battle. And then Richard Quigley heard about what was going on, went down there to join forces to protect Jerry. Jerry is a disabled man, and they all know that. We all know he's a disabled man. But they have carried on this campaign against him that's just outrageous, arresting him over and over again, at one time holding him on a $100,000 bail for trespass in a public place. It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable, but it happens. And the so what they did when they put this $100,000 bail on him, they had a bail hearing, and you know the judge said, "Oh, okay, well we'll lower the bail, but you've got to stay away from the Aptos shopping center." 2 years he had to stay away from the shopping center. Couldn't even go in the shopping center. His own bank was there. That's where he banked. Couldn't bank there anymore. Couldn't go anywhere near. You know, it's a phenomenal story, and it really does mirror what's happening downtown with the street performers, the kids. You know, kids being kids. Our society is totally intolerant of kids being kids. We don't want to see them. Just like we don't want to see the homeless. We don't want to see anybody who looks different. And in case you think I'm talking about Santa Ana, Orange County, I'm not. I'm talking about Santa Cruz. Santa Cruz. It's sick. You know. And in some ways, it's even harder to fight in Santa Cruz because of this complete fallacious idea that the Santa Cruz is this liberal bastion of, you know, love, dove, and everything good about the 60s. You know, well, that's long gone, believe me. We are now the meanest city in the state of California. We are the only city, as far as I know, that actually makes it illegal to cover yourself with a blanket between 11 and 8 in the morning. And I said I was going to dedicate everything I had to say tonight to Robert Wagner, the Vietnam vet who died of exposure on the doorstep of his city hall. And I want you to know right now that I am trying to track down a relative of his. I know his daughter lives in Santa Cruz. Her name is Tammy Wagner. If anybody can help me with this, I would really appreciate it, because I want to sue the city of Santa Cruz for wrongful death. I think the blanket ban is the direct cause of that man's death. And if we can't get rid of that law any other way, maybe that's the way to get rid of it. So, got your video. Let's do that. And then I'll talk a little more about the actual lawsuit later.
They're not laughing anymore.
Yeah, they're certainly not laughing. Well, for those of you who don't know me, I am a local civil rights attorney. I practice all over the state. I used to do a little bit of this and a little bit of that, but now I do nothing but civil rights work in federal court. I did challenge the Santa Cruz sleeping ban. What year? 97. And in my closing argument, I will brag a little bit and say that I had people in the audience in tears. We were in front of Judge Kelly. And, of course, I had to keep pinching myself and telling myself, I'm fighting for someone's right to sleep. To close their eyes. I mean, it's just so hard to imagine. It's so hard to even believe that we could have a law so mean. At any rate, so I finished this eloquent argument about how it was a violation of the Geneva Convention and sleep deprivation is a torture, is a form of torture, etc., etc. And I got all done, and Judge Kelly said, "Are you done?" And I said, "Yeah." And he said, "Well, they can sleep during the day, can't they?" And my mouth just dropped open. I mean, I was in shock. And right then and there, I realized that there is no way we're ever going to challenge this law in state court, in local courts. No way. there's just too much political good old boy system going on in our local courts that there's no way that they are going to declare a patently and obviously unconstitutional law unconstitutional. They won't do it. So we have decided that we're going to take a second attack on the law, only this time we're going to do it in federal court. Now, federal judges are appointed for life. They really could care less about petty bullshit local politics, okay? And it's been my experience, with a few exceptions, that they are not concerned about the impact, as it were, on local politics. So we're hoping that's the case. Of course, there is a difference because it depends on who appointed the judge. You know, for instance, I've had great success with Judge Ware, you know, who was appointed by Carter, and my First Amendment case, Roberts' First Amendment case in front of Judge White, the famous Heil Krohn case. I don't know if you know about it. Heil Krohn case. He dismissed out of hand before we even had a chance to do discovery in the case. He's just been overturned by the Ninth Circuit, we are very proud to say. The case is going back to Judge White, and he's going to have to eat it, you know, along with his turkey this Christmas. At any rate, so it does depend a lot on the judge you get, and it is a crapshoot as to who you're going to get. It's just a rotation system. But we're hoping that we get some. I mean, there are some really good judges on the federal bench in San Jose, and we're hoping we get one of them. Now, there are a couple of things we have decided that we don't have enough money to mount what's called an as-applied challenge to the law. An as-applied challenge is. We're not just saying that it's unconstitutional on its face. We're saying that it's unconstitutional as it applies to people. Okay? That's very expensive because then we have to get a lot of people together. It means a lot of depositions, and it gets very costly. Tens of thousands of dollars to carry on an as-applied challenge. And I'm not talking about attorney fees. I've agreed to do this pro bono, so we're talking just costs. Okay. So we've decided to start out with what's called a facial challenge, and that's a lot easier because we don't have to prove anything other than on its face it's unconstitutional. Now, the reason why I think we have a good shot, there have been other cases that have done this, most notably the Tobe decision, which came out of Santa Ana, that was actually declared to be constitutional, their camping ban. And that's important that I make that distinction because the Santa Ana ordinance, and I know a lot of this because I was born behind the Orange Curtain, and raised there. Orange County. Okay. The Santa Ana camping ban doesn't even mention sleep. Doesn't say a word about sleep. It's all about camping. You know, whereas Santa Cruz ordinance, we all know, defines camping as sleeping. You know? So it's an entirely different ordinance, and we think we're going to have an entirely different result than the Tobe decision. And of course, one of the things that is, you know, particularly abhorrent to me is the blanket ban. I want to tell you how mean the cops are in the city of Santa Cruz. At one point, we were advising our homeless clients to cut holes in their blankets and wear them as ponchos. The cops were ripping them off their heads and taking them as evidence. This is how mean the city is. It's you know, it's embarrassing. It's embarrassing to live here. I moved here 30 years ago because of the tolerance in this city. because you could walk down the street with two heads because most people had three, you know? I mean, it was great, you know, music going on and fun and you know. And suddenly we have become the Carmel North is what's happening. I call it the Carmelization of Santa Cruz.
The heat is on.
The heat is on, man. It's really true. And I think that the merchants really don't get it. It's funny because what brought people to Santa Cruz was that uniqueness, was the fact that we were different from Carmel. It wasn't just the same old thing where, you know, we have, you know, our little art galleries and all of the frou-frou things in Carmel. But you could see jugglers and musicians and you know, spiked hair and wild tattoos. Those are my kids, by the way. You know, just really, you know, unique stuff. And the merchants, you know, are crying, oh, our business is being hurt, our business is being hurt. Well, you know what's being hurt? It's being hurt because who wants to come to Santa Cruz when it's just like Carmel? Why don't we go to Carmel? Why wouldn't we go to someplace like Carmel? it's only 50 miles away, you know. So, that's the plan, is to make a constitutional challenge to the law on its face, saying the law on its face is unconstitutional. That it's a deprivation of a basic human right, the right to sleep, and the right to cover yourself with a blanket. You know, I don't know what's more basic. You know, I have a lot of cases. I sue. If I can succeed.
There will be a problem.
I've been, you know, fighting the good fight along with Becky and Robert and a lot of other people, and I have to say thank you to you guys because you work tirelessly, you work confrontationally, you work in a way that takes a lot of guts and a lot of just pure loyalty to the movement, and it's, you know, I am in awe of you guys for what you continue to do, and that is to be thrown in jail for writing on a sidewalk in chalk, you know, but it's so important that we stand up for our rights. The one thing I would like to leave all of you with today is that I ask this, actually there are two things. First thing, and I do this everywhere I speak, please make yourself into good witnesses. When you see a cop harassing a kid or a homeless person or whoever it is, doesn't matter, don't turn your head the other way and walk away. Walk up and listen and make yourself available to those persons. I have three or four lawsuits on behalf of homeless people where if it weren't for a citizen who witnessed what happened, it would have been the homeless person against the cop. And we all know who wins in that circumstance. Okay? But because we had somebody not only who was willing to be a good witness but willing to speak up, I had one incident where the people actually waited for 2 hours outside the jail until they released the person, so that they could give them their name and number and say, I'll be your witness.
Wow.
Right. Okay? Now, you know, that's all our jobs, okay? This is all of our jobs to do this, is to be a good witness and not turn away. And when you see any, I don't care where it is, you know, even if you're driving in your car and you see a cop stopped over somebody and it looks like, you know, maybe it's a young person or, you know, whatever, pull over and just watch and listen and be a good witness. Hey, if you can put a camera on him, carry I got to tell you a little bit about Jerry Henry and his case on Saturday. Interestingly enough, Jerry Henry does not walk out his door without at least one tape recorder running all the time, okay? In this incident where they arrested him on Saturday, the cops confiscated three tape recorders, only they missed the fourth. We have it all on tape. tape. Every bit of it on tape. I was afraid to ask. Stop that. He's wearing a Franciscan robe these days, so maybe, you know, who knows? I don't know what they wear under those things, eh? You know. And then I just forgot about what the second thing was I wanted to say. But, yeah.
Kate, you know, if people do see these towns, they can always call the
cop
line.
Exactly.
423
Cop. There's also a cop watch online. If you are online, you can go, it's www.santacruzcopwatch, where you can report incidents of, you know, some sort of brutality or anything like that. I know what the second thing was. Second thing was that each one of us, I'll tell you, you know, the government tries real hard to separate us.
Yeah.
They try to make us be enemies of each other. People who shouldn't be enemies. Exactly. And so, you know, we each think that we're running up against our individual wall. Well, you know, it's all the same wall. And so each one of you, I would like to reach out to somebody that's maybe politically not where you are, but convince them that the same government that's trying to take away the homeless right to sit or sleep is trying to take away your right to have a gun. Under the Second Amendment. And if we could only get the, I mean, you know, my best buddy, Richard Quigley, okay, who's been my friend for 25 years, is a Goldwater conservative. Okay? And I'm, you know, his favorite lefty. You know? But we converge on the issue of civil and human rights. And we feed off of each other in a way that's really good because we come at it from different directions. So if each person would you know, appeal to somebody and try to make them understand that we have more in common than we have different, and that it's going to take all of us working together to eliminate that wall. And to break, you know, Mr. Gorbachev, you know, Mr. Rotkin, take down this wall. But you know, we really need a coalition of, should I say, the willing? I don't even think so. That's a pretty embarrassing thing to know. But we need to coalesce, and we need to get together. And start realizing how much the same we are instead of how different we are. Help each other, be there for each other, and so I guess that's basically two ways of saying the same thing. Is just be a good witness and talk to people, talk to your friends, talk to even people that you don't even think are gonna, you know. Understand or believe, you know, something might get through. You never know. You know, if you just point out to them that, you know, wait a minute, you know, aren't you upset that they're trying to take away this and that right, you know? Well, that's the same government trying to take away my right. You know? Do you ever think about that? And you know, you'd be surprised what happens. Any questions? Oh, I did have one more thing to say. And I'm not really good at this because I'm not a very good business person and I, you know, I'm certainly not that great on self-promotion in terms of money, but was asked if I could say a little bit about the cost of this lawsuit. Even though we're only doing a facial challenge, we're estimating that the cost could range somewhere between $5,000 and $10,000. It's a good cause. There are... I'm going to be co-counsel with two other attorneys, one of them a seasoned civil rights attorney from Berkeley by the name of David Beauvais, another local attorney who has been really helpful in a lot of situations with the homeless, Paul Sanford. So the three of us and anybody else we can recruit along the way are going to tackle this thing, and we also have a really able ally in a legal assistance from Ray Grunheit. I don't know how many of you know him, but one of the most incredible legal minds in the state. So at any rate, we're going to need some money. And, you know, we have some money coming, I guess, from a nonprofit. So I'm making a pitch. You know, anybody?
So, yeah, the question is, well, if people want to write a grant for the tax exempt.
Well, that's why I'm saying we have a nonprofit that is willing to funnel donations for the cause. And Robertson wanted to know about that.
Yeah, if anybody wants to, you got $1,000 burning a hole in your pocket or something. There's a group
you got $1 burning a hole in your pocket. Go ahead.
Right. Or yeah, whatever.
20 cents, man.
You could probably, you should give the money. I will immodestly say to people at the Huff table, who will then pass it on to an organization in Berkeley called CD Inc., which is covering it's our nonprofit cover. They will then, if you're giving them a check, you have a substantial amount of money you want a tax discount on, we can put you in touch with them. You can contact them directly. They're up in Berkeley. David Beauvais actually has the same address as CD Inc. because it's the other attorney that works with him is the leader of CD Inc. CD Inc. covers Pop Watch in Berkeley and has also agreed to help funnel money back to the sleeping van.
For those of us who only have a few dollars, there's a
cup right here. There you go.
Cup right here, and I'll start passing that around.
So that was Kate Wells at the Human Rights Organization meeting, and Me Too, and a few others. That's about it for Bathrop Spears Broadsides tonight. I'm going to be coming back on Sunday mornings at 9:30, this Sunday, that is. And if you want to join me, please do. In between times, if you have something you see on the street, Kate's quite right. It's really important to be a good witness, really important to stop and show both the people being victimized and the victimizers when the police are acting inappropriately, that there is somebody watching, that it's not being done in a vacuum, that they are going to be held accountable in some way, even though it's really hard to do that. Still, it tends to lessen the level of abuse. So give a call if you see anything to 423-HUFF, 423-4833. It's also the number to call if you want to be on this show. You can also post any accounts of police misconduct, as mentioned, on the CopWatch website, www.santacruzcopwatch.org, or on the Indie Media website, www.santacruz.indiemedia.org. You can also go to the Huff website for more information, www.huffsantacruz.org. And that's about it. I was going to kind of give one piece of good news around the war in Iraq. Not much good news, but there is a recent report from John Walsh on the Counterpunch website talks about the different surveys regarding what U.S. opinion is on Iraq. There was a Pew Research Center survey conducted by Princeton Survey Research Associates International December 1st through 16th of this year. Do you think the U.S. should keep military troops in Iraq until the situation is stabilized? Do you think the U.S. should bring its troops home as soon as possible? Withdraw, 40%. Stay, 56%. The ABC News Washington Post poll from December 16th through 19th, do you think the United States should keep its military forces in Iraq until civil order is restored there, even if that means continued U.S. military casualties? Or do you think the U.S. should withdraw its military forces from Iraq in order to avoid further U.S. military casualties, even if that means civil order is not restored there? Results, withdraw 39.5%, stay 58%. Harris poll, do you favor keeping, this is from November of this year, a large number of U.S. troops in Iraq until there is a stable government there, or bringing most of our troops home in the next year, withdraw 47%, stay 50%. And so the commentary of this writer is, this peculiar since we are routinely exhorted not to dwell on the mistakes of the past where Bush and the neocons are soundly thrashed in the polls, but to decide what we should do about the future. Most polling does not consider the future. So there it is. Somewhere between 39% and 47% of the population want the U.S. out of Iraq as soon as possible. And this number is all the more amazing since the option of withdrawal is nowhere advocated or even discussed in the mainstream media or even in the liberal media except to dismiss it. There
There are exceptions such as Nader and the Greens, but these are clearly persona non grati, even on liberal outlets like Air America. All the leading Democrats are for putting in more troops and continuing the war, leaving the 39% to 47% of us unrepresented by either major party. Another Democratic betrayal. And I think what's interesting here is that there's such a huge number, nearly a majority, that want the U.S. out of there now by major polls. So don't give up hope, folks. Don't give up hope. Don't stop the protests. This first night crap that's coming up tomorrow, where the first night committee has decided that neither the opponents of the war nor those who want to support the soldiers in the war but don't necessarily support the war are going to be allowed to march in the first night parade, is really atrocious. I thought that people like Grant Wilson and others, like Louis LaFortune, who also broadcasts on this station, had stood up to the first night bureaucrats and said no way when they tried to sideline Art and Revolution last year. Apparently, they didn't stand up tall enough, because first night management is getting away with another shutdown of free speech in Santa Cruz. I don't know if maybe the parade will be rained out. Who knows? But Huff may be down there on, I guess, first night. That's tomorrow night. We'd be down there with, you know, doing our thing as we did last year. They didn't drive us away last year. They won't drive us away this year. We may decide to sleep in or go do something else this year. But it's really outrageous what the first night organization is doing here. And it shouldn't be permitted. The stores that are permitting this should be picketed, or at least notify that they will not be supported in the future unless they immediately assure that there will be a First Amendment allowed on first night. First night without the First Amendment? Well, that's what we got tomorrow night. Anyway, join me for the update on Sunday. I will be back. Here's a little music from Phoenix to go out on. And coming up next is Uncle Dennis from the Cream to the Dregs. Stay with us. Thank you.
Good evening. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, and it is time for From the Cream to the Dregs. This is Old Lady Scarms. I'm filling in again for Uncle Dennis, who's normally your host for this program, which on a regular show would focus on the music of the 60s and 70s, but this evening that's not going to be the case. Last week I did a show with DJ JG Wiz, and we did do music from the 60s and 70s. But I don't own a lot of music from that time, and I don't really know a lot of Uncle Dennis's records very well. He did give me the code to his vault there, but, you know, I'd kind of maxed out my knowledge of that last week, what I knew. And I could play random stuff that I'm unaware of, but I'd rather just play some music that I like, and hopefully that you'll like as well, for you out of my collection tonight. If you have any requests, and it could be music from the 60s and 70s, or it could be something else, then give me a call at 427-3772. And I'm going to start it off with a song from Greg Brown's album, Slant Six Mind.
She got a slant six mind, supercharged heart. The little princess is singing about her part. She says, come hither, but when I get hither, she's yawn. I was looking for what I love. Wherever it was, it's gone.